beginning to recognize what Sayadaw calls the job description of our mind states. As I mentioned towards the end of the guided meditation, so much interrelationship is seen. We see how these functions of mind not only affect how we act in the world, but affect our bodies, affect how we orient to the world, what we perceive. One of the ways that I've seen aversion filter the mind is it tends to orient the mind towards taking in things to be averse to. So they're shapers. They shape the mind. They shape our bodily experience. And we begin to see, I mean, one of the values of seeing this is that we start to see that it's the process itself that's doing the shaping. It's not me. And that also another piece of this is not only do these mind states shape our experience, kind of orient us in particular directions in the world. And remember, you know, it's not just these reactive mind states that shape the mind. It's the wholesome mind states that shape the mind too. Love will shape the mind. Compassion will shape the mind and body. Will orient us, compassion will orient us towards connection, care, action to alleviate suffering. So these, we begin to see that it's not, that as we observe these processes, the seeing of them helps us to recognize, wow, I'm not doing that. That is just that function of mind doing what it thinks is going to make me happy often. You know, often that's the orientation of these functions of mind, but many of them are very confused. So, as I said, aversion, thinking that the separation is going to bring happiness and that is the way to happiness. But not only do these qualities of mind shape our experience, but they have been shaped themselves. And so they are themselves conditioned. So they are both conditioned, you know, by what we've experienced. And often again, you know, it's not often, but just like it's not necessarily our choice to have been conditioned with a particular orientation to the world. I mean, as I've mentioned several times, my own strategy towards happiness that I'd learned in my life was this aversive strategy and still is the flavor generally of how my mind goes when it gets stuck or caught in a place of non-wisdom. This is the strategy the mind has gravitated towards. But I didn't choose that. You know, I didn't say, wake up in the womb and say, I'm going to be aversive. You know, this was how my life was shaped, based on my experience with my family, my friends, the people on the playground who were mean to me. I mean, the whole experience of my life was that shaping. And so again, that too can be seen, because sometimes we can see as something arises, as a state of mind arises, as an attitude comes into our mind. Sometimes we also see not only just that quality, the aversion or the greed or the love. I mean, they're all shaped in our mind. We may see as that arises some connection to our history. You know, we may see some relationship to our history. And that also helps us to recognize this is not self. This is just the conditioned nature of this mind. And that understanding can help us to let go of taking it so personally, so that it can be seen and understood for what it is, and also be seen and understood for how it shapes the mind and what direction it shapes the mind. And so those mental qualities, reactive mental qualities, tend to shape the mind towards suffering. And the wholesome qualities tend to shape the mind towards ease and peace and freedom. And as the mind begins to understand these shapings, our system says, yeah, I'll take the ones that lead towards ease and peace, thank you. And it begins to let go of those more reactive states. And this is a long process, you know. It's not something that happens overnight. It's the learnings, I think we've talked about the learnings kind of coming and going, or the understandings, the deeper understandings coming and going. Even as we've learned something, we can't always live from that learning. We may remember it. We may be able to kind of borrow the wisdom. I think I talked about this on Sunday morning, to borrow the wisdom from ourselves of how the mind understands that this view that's embedded in greed, that I have to have this thing, that it's not a legitimate view, you know, that it's a misunderstanding of where happiness can be found. It's a particular kind of happiness that can be found by joining with something pleasant, but it's not ultimately the well-being that we're searching for. And so the mind begins to understand that and sees that when the mind is not caught in those reactive states, there's a different kind of happiness and begins to gravitate in that direction. And so this process is one of an organic unfolding, the development of the continuity of mindfulness from this perspective, which really is the simplicity of what the practice is. As I said, you know, am I aware? What am I aware of? That is developing this continuity of mindfulness. And with the perspective that we're, you know, it's not just the awareness of, as I also said on Sunday, it's not just the awareness. There's a perspective of wisdom, of curiosity about, well, what is this as a human experience that creates the conditions for this organic process, this natural process of releasing those states of mind that create suffering. Gill has a phrase that I love. It really resonates with me. I think he said something like, you know, there's a biological imperative towards freedom. And, you know, I think that connects with this very natural mechanism of our human system to, I think biologists call it like homeostasis. It's the place where the mind and body can be most at rest. And yet the way our system is constructed, views and beliefs kind of enter into that process and have the mind kind of settle for a certain level of rest that it thinks is as good as it gets. And through this practice, we see they're different, that we've been settling. Let's say we've been settling for a kind of rest that is just not worthy of it. And so the mind, with this process, this kind of biological movement or biological imperative towards this rest, when it gets the information that this state of mind is actually not rest or not leading to rest, it begins to say, hey, I think I'll try something else. And so the practice is really simple. We just cultivate, support this continuity, and let what's revealed, you know, cultivating this continuity with this perspective of curiosity of the human nature of this experience, and let what is revealed inform our system. And that informing will lead us in the direction of freedom. And then, of course, there are times when that capacity to, oh, this is what's happening, that ability to be curious and just rest with, oh, this is what's happening, this is what's happening. There are times when we can't do that because the momentum of whatever reactivity is so strong that the mind just can't do that. And so those are the times that we need to bring in our tools to focus our attention, to redirect from something really reactive, to cultivate love and compassion, to actively bring in qualities of mind that support freedom. Understanding from the perspective of Sutta Panya, Chinta Panya, those wisdoms of what we've learned from the teachings and what we've learned from our own practice. Oh, this is not helpful. I see the mind is fully caught here. It's not able to just rest with this. So, yeah, I need to take my attention somewhere else. And so that, too, is a part of our practice and the wisdom of recognizing and understanding when we can't just, oh, this is what's happening. And yet so much of the wisdom does develop in this place of step back, simple. Just, yeah, this is what's happening. The processes of body and mind, the way the mind recognizes experience, what it understands about how this shapes things, the mind does that. The processes of mind are kind of designed to recognize what leads us in directions. The mindfulness is a kind of a tracking function. The mindfulness kind of keeps track of what related to what, how did this connect to that. And so that function is not something we have to do. It kind of comes along with this continuity of mindfulness. And so we can step back and relax and observe. Our work is in that cultivation of that stability. And trust that, given the simple perspective of curiosity, what we need to see will reveal itself to free the mind.